Hi everyone, we're coming here from the end of the fast day. Everybody's kind of either sleeping or weak, trying to just get through the rest of the day, and I wanted to share something on Shavasar Vatamas and really the whole 3 weeks in general that I think could help us sort of make sense of a few different pieces that we hear about during this time. So as we all know, the 3 weeks is pretty much the most intense time of mourning that we have as a nation. It starts today with Shavasar Vatamas, and then it sort of culminates with Tisha B'Av, which every single bad thing that's ever happened is rooted in Tisha B'Av. There's kinnis written about all the different horrific events that have happened that we say on Tisha B'Av. That's really, like, if you had to pick a day, that would be the number one bad day. In fact, I mean, the halacha even says this, you're not supposed to go to court during Av. It's just a very, overall, very bad time, and it starts today with Shavasar Vatamas, and these 3 weeks are... We have a sense of mourning over these 3 weeks. And the name we hear that's given is called Bein HaMetzarim, right? It literally means in between. It's translated as dire straits, but if you could imagine, it's in between like a narrow alleyway. There's sort of walls on either side, so you don't really have that much room to move around. You sort of feel trapped. That's the definition of Bein HaMetzarim. And the word comes, the name comes from a pasuk in Eicha, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Gimel. It says, Kol Roid Feha Hisiguha Bein HaMetzarim. It's describing the Jewish nation. And it says that all those who chase after her will catch her in this narrow alley, in between these, in this narrow passageway. So there's a Hasidish Vart that I heard last year, pretty sure most of you are familiar with it, that it says the word, the pasuk for Bein HaMetzarim is called Roid Feha Hisiguha, right, Bein HaMetzarim. So Roid Feha can be read Roidef Yud Hei. So the Vart is that Kol Roid Feha is called Roidef Yud Hei. Anybody who chases after Hashem will be able, Hisiguha will reach him during this time of Bein HaMetzarim. Okay, that's the Vart. So at face value, sounds nice, sounds sweet, but I think it's lacking a certain sense of depth if you just look at it like that, because this time, like we just said, like we all know, is intense mourning. I mean, nobody during the Holocaust was thinking that, let me chase after Hashem and now I'll get him, at least not on the surface. Like, if you think the Churban, if the Beis HaMikdash was our house together with Hashem, so whether you look at it like a husband and wife or a parent and child, this is a time when the child's getting kicked out of the house, or the couple is getting divorced, right? We were getting divorced from Hashem. So nobody in the right mind would tell a divorced couple, like, as they're giving the get, right? Like, now's the time to get close to each other. It doesn't make sense if you think about it, like, if you look at it superficially. So I actually heard something last year which describes which talked about one of the events that happened on Shavasar Vatamas that I think bridges the depth behind that message and the wording in the pasuk over there. And I'd like to share that with you. So we all know the first thing that happened at Shavasar Vatamas was that Moshe broke the luchos when he came down from Har Sinai. He came down, Hashem tells him, Lech reid ki shiches amcha, your nation has corrupted themselves. Asu lahem igal masecha, they made themselves a metal cow, a metal calf as a god. And Moshe comes down, and he sees what's happening, and he throws the luchos to the ground, he shatters them. So this is like the catalyst for Shavasar Vatamas, and then four other things happen throughout the course of history. All the rest of them were during the times of the Beis HaMikdash. But this is the catalyst for Shavasar Vatamas. So, obvious question. These people had just left Mitzrayim. They had just heard the Torah directly from Hashem 40 days earlier. So is it really possible for us to believe that, whether they said it themselves or whether the Eir of Rav told it to them, for them to really believe, Eile Elehecha Yisrael, like, this is your God? Or Rashi says they did a bunch of Avodah Zarahs, these are your gods? Like, they had just seen Hashem, literally. They had just seen Hashem. So how could they possibly believe that this is your God? They just cooked this cow in a pot. Like, it doesn't really make sense that they believed that. So I think if we take a closer look at what Moshe's role in Matan Torah was, we'll be able to understand the sense of anxiety and fear that these people had. So Moshe tells them Hashem is going to come down to give you the Torah. And they say, we want to see Hashem directly, we don't want to hear it from you, Moshe. And Moshe says, okay, fine, then you have to take 3 more days to prepare yourselves. Hashem says, okay, we're going to do it this way, I'll come down, I'll talk directly to you. And Hashem says the first two Asaras HaDibris, the first two of the 10, they hear directly from Hashem. Anechi Hashem Lekecha, and LaYelecha Elohim Acherim, they hear directly from Hashem. And the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Peches and Petes, I believe, describes what happened to them. So it's pretty scary. It says that each word that left Hashem's mouth, they died. They got catapulted back about 9 miles each word. It was a terrifying, very scary experience. And the Pasuk even tells us that they were pretty terrified. They say to Moshe, daber ata imanu v'nishma v'al yedaber imanu alehim pen namus, right? Moshe, you please speak to us and we'll be able to hear you, but we can't keep listening to Hashem's voice. We're going to die. We're going to keep on dying. This is too much for us to handle. It was too terrifying for them. So Moshe says, okay, and he tells them the rest of the Aseres HaDibros. So when this pasuk tells us and shows us that what they viewed Moshe as was sort of like a blast shield or a mask that they were able to, that kept them safe from Hashem. Hashem was this overpowering, scary, terrifying, awesome entity that they weren't able to handle directly. They needed Moshe to be in his position, in Moshe's position, to be able to be like a shockwave. Like Moshe absorbed the shock waves and then gave over the message in a way that they were able to then understand it and hear it and not die from it. So 40 days later, when they see Moshe not coming down the mountain, this fear sets back in and they're pretty terrified again, because what's going to be now? Hashem's going to have to keep telling us the rest of the Torah, right? Our journey's not over. We have to go now to Eretz Yisrael. There's a journey. There's messages. There's halachas that we have to learn. There's laws. There's rules. Hashem's going to teach this to us directly. We can't handle that. This is not practical. This isn't going to work. And they're terrified. But I think it's also obvious that they weren't just... So they look for a replacement for Moshe. Sorry, they decide they need a replacement for Moshe. But they weren't just looking for a leader, because right before Moshe went up, Moshe told the people that Aaron and Hur, you guys stay here. It says, Mibal Devarim Yigash Aleihem. That Aaron and Hur, you guys stay here, down at the bottom of the mountain while I go up. Anybody who needs the judgment or anybody who needs anything, they have you too. So they killed Hur by the eagle. Fine, because he wasn't interested in going along with the eagle, but the fact they killed him, the fact that they felt they needed an eagle and they couldn't just ask Aaron or Hur to be their leader, right? Moshe had appointed them. You two split it up, six shvatim, or one of you will be like a president and vice president, however they wanted to do it, but they had two successors for Moshe. Why did they need to make an eagle? So I think the name that they get the eagle, the name that the Torah gives the eagle, it tells us what the problem was. The Torah calls it, Hashem tells Moshe that they made ego masecha, which again means metal. Rashi says lashon mateches, but the word masecha also is related to the word mesech, which means a cover. Hashem says elehe masecha le'sasalach, which also means means like a covering or a mask. So what they were looking for, again, was they viewed Moshe like a mask between them and Hashem, and they were looking for the same type of thing, some god that can be a mask in between them and Hashem. Now, how the cow is going to do that, I have no idea. But that was their plan. That was what they wanted. So Moshe comes down the mountain and he sees this. And he looks at what he's holding in his hands, which are these two luchos, which the pasuk says about them, ksuvim be'etzba alehim, right? That they were written by the finger of Hashem, which obviously represents an absolute and direct connection to Hashem. They were a piece of Hashem that he inscribed himself into these luchos, which was like an absolute and direct relationship with Hashem. So the first thing that Moshe needed to do was destroy the mask, because they weren't supposed to have a mask. But the next thing that he had to do was also destroy the luchos, because once you think you need a mask, then you're incapable of having a direct relationship with Hashem. Right? You can't just jump from, you know, destroy the mask and say, oh, here I am. So he needed to destroy the luchos, and that was why we got the second set of luchos, which were on a lesser level. So we sort of corrupted that direct relationship that we were capable of having with Hashem. So I think that Moshe's message to the people on Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, when he breaks those luchos or when he breaks the egel, was that, yes, those people ruined that ultimate perfect connection and direct relationship that they had with Hashem. But the message of Shiva Asar B'Tamuz is that we're supposed to break the masks that we make for Hashem in order to realize and understand and appreciate the fact that we automatically have this direct relationship with Hashem, whether we try or not. We automatically have that. He loves us infinitely more than we can possibly imagine, and he wants that direct relationship with us. He's not scared of our averus. He's not scared of when we slip and fall. It doesn't matter. So, yes, this is a time of mourning and sadness, but at the same time, it's a time to see that the mourning, the what caused the mourning and sadness, which was, for the most part, the violence of the Romans, the seeming hatred that came from Hashem as the Beis HaMikdash was getting destroyed, that too was also just the mask. Behind that violence and hatred, and seeming hatred, was a huge sense of love, and the proof is the fact that Hashem, it says that Hashem, I forgot the pasuk, but Hashem throws out his wrath, throws his anger on sticks and stones. He destroys his house so that he doesn't have to destroy us, right? The very fact that there was violence going on at that point was also a mask that Hashem was wearing to be able to save us and not have to destroy us. And our job throughout the 3 weeks, and specifically today and on Tisha B'Av, is to see past that mask, to see all the bad things that happen to us, whether they're violent or not, but just to see all the bad things that happen to us as coming directly from Hashem, to see Hashem behind everything that happens to us. And when that happens, it's interesting, I heard this from Rabbi Akiva Tatz, that if somebody walks into a room wearing a mask, like on Purim, let's say, right? So everybody's trying to guess who's behind the mask. But as soon as you say as soon as you guess right and you figure out who it is, the person's not going to keep wearing the mask, because then it's just stupid. Like, you know who I am behind the mask becomes purposeless, right? There's no point to it anymore. So if we see Hashem behind the mask, if we see Hashem behind the violence, behind the hardships, behind the sadness that we all have in our lives, then Hashem's going to take off his mask, and there's no point in Hashem wearing the mask anymore, right? That's the mission of these 3 weeks. And I think something absolutely fascinating, if you look at the psukim right after Matan Torah in Parshas Mishpatim, so as they're hearing the words from Hashem, it says Vayam Dume Rachai, right? As they heard, it says Vayar Kala Am Esa Ish Vesal Apidim Vesahar Ashein. They see the mountain smoking, and they hear the sounds, and they're all terrified. And it says Vayam Dume Rachai. They stood from far away. Right, Vayar Ha'am Vayanu, Vayam Dume Rachik. They see everything, they're shaking, they're trembling, and they're standing from far away. And then they say that pasuk that we quoted before. They told Moshe, Daber Ata Yimanu V'Neshma'a V'Yidaber Yimanu Elihim Pen Namus. Don't let Hashem speak to us, we're going to die. And then Moshe says, Al Tira'u, don't worry, don't be afraid. Ki Levavur Nasi Tzeskem Baho Elihim. Hashem is coming to make you, to raise you up, to show, to give you that direct connection, to raise you up from among the nations. And Uvavur Tia Yirasai Al Panechim Levatita Chato, Hashem is coming to show you, to make you be afraid in the sense that you should only not sin, but not for any sense of the fear itself. And then the next pasuk says, Vaya'amid Ha'am Mirachik, the people stand from far away. Umaisha Nigash El Ha'arafel Asher Shamu Elihim. Then Moshe goes up into the cloud that Hashem was there, and then Moshe tells them the rest of the Asaras Adibris. But if you look, what the people didn't realize is the people's position didn't change. The Torah specifically tells us that originally, after they heard from Hashem directly, it says Vayamdu Meirachik, they stood from far away. And then after Moshe goes up and Moshe is about to start talking to them again, it says Vayamid Ha'am Meirachik, meaning the people's position never changed. They were technically able to continue hearing from Hashem's voice. It would have might have been scary, but they were the same far away, the same distance that they were originally, and nothing changed from their end. Nothing actually changed from their end. They were changed in the sense that they thought they were scared. They thought that they couldn't do it, but in fact, they really could. And I think that's the same thing. That again, we didn't need a mask the first two dibros, and we were okay. Hashem kept reviving us. We technically didn't need the mask the last two. We didn't need much of the last eight of the Asaras Adibros either. And I think that, as a closing point, it's interesting that so this pasuk that we're talking about of Bein HaMetzarim, it says Kol Reitfel He Sigua Bein HaMetzarim. And there's a pasuk in the Teichacha that says the same two verbs. It says Uva'u Alecha, at the end of the Teichacha, it says Uva'u Alecha kol haklalei sa'ela or dafucha v'yisiducha. All of these curses will come upon you, and they will chase you and reach you. So we know that the Hebrew calendar is more than just a bunch of dates and months put together. The Hebrew calendar, each day, week, month, season, all has specific energies and potential that we can sort of tap into. So, like, for example, Pesach is a time of freedom, and actually it's interesting that if you look throughout the entire world, most of the holidays that are celebrated during that time of spring of April have to do with freedom. Hanukkah is the same thing. Hanukkah is a time of light shining, and the Gemara talks about how Adam Harishon realized that, and I mean, literally, every single religion has, I looked up, every single religion has some holiday that talks about, that deals with light. In some sense, like the Christians string up light on their houses. The Muslims have some holiday of light. There's Kwanzaa, which has to do with light. There's literally, I looked it up, every single religion has something to do with light. And the days start getting longer on the 25th day of Kislev, right? That's the shortest day. And the next day, the sun starts shining a little bit more. So I think that with these two psukim, coming back to the 3 weeks, I think that the pasuk in the Teichacha, it says, Uva alacha kala kol esayla, redefucha v'yisigucha, and kol redfeha yisigua bein hametzarim, which we now define to know that if you are able to take the mask out of the picture and see Hashem behind the mask, then you'll be able to have a direct relationship with Him. I think what it's telling us is that these times of the 3 weeks in the heat of the summer, it's not a time to sit back and relax. It's a time of running and chasing and catching, right? There's a redifa and a hasiga, I guess, if that's said correctly. Redefucha v'yisigucha, right? Fe'a hisigua. It's the same. You're running and you're catching. You're chasing. Something's chasing. There's something. The energy right now is the energy of running and chasing. And it's our decision whether we want to run and chase after Hashem and see past the mask. And chas v'shalom, if we don't, then the Teichacha tells that the uva olacha kolakol is elor defucha v'yisigucha, because something has to run and something has to be caught at this time of the year. So as this fast closes and we all get hungrier and hungrier, Hashem should give us the kayach and strength, extra energy when we're lacking our physical energy. We should have that extra burst of spiritual energy to see past the mask that sometimes manifests itself as violence, as seemed hatred, as hardships, as sadness, as all the different things that we all know far too well that are really just masks of Hashem saying, I'm giving you a hardship, but it's levavur nasis eschem. To raise you up, to make you be special inside this world. And we should all be zeichet to that. Have a good rest of your fast.